Blog Talk Radio.
Can you hear me, Lance?
Please don't. Yes, sir. Can you hear me? How's it going?
You know, you're talking, and I'm looking at the thing, and I'm going, wait a minute, 2 minutes? What the heck? There's a certain thing that you have to set, and if you don't hit it right, it'll only give you 15 minutes. So we only have 15 minutes. So I had to reboot the whole show or whatever. So my bad. For the people listening, you're back here live on Scoop Slam Radio. Maybe it is time to get out to business or whatever, but we were talking a little bit about that, about the business and stuff like that. And Lance, let me run this by you real quick, because of course we got Alan Goez coming up in a little while. But you know, especially you and I, even off the air, we go back and forth, and a lot of times you're like, dude, you got to get with the times, bro. You know, maybe Gable lost because, you know, they're planning something for him down the future for a bigger win. And you know, a lot of people want to work with them because they know if they work with them, he's going to shine them up. And that's who they want. And I'm like, that is the stupidest thing. They should give him that belt to send the people home happy and, you know, stuff like that. And it's the same thing yesterday. You know, they wrestled in a six-man. They brought in Thomas Ciampa, and Gable had to take all the heat. I'm thinking, well, that don't make any sense. Why wouldn't they put the heat on Ciampa and then bring in Otis to clean house, and then Chad Gable takes over and everybody goes home happy, but he took all the heat. It makes him, downgrades him a little bit. Give that dude some shine. You're working on it. Why bring him up to build him back down? Go ahead, Lance. Is it me? I'm an old man, or just do I need to get with the times or what?
But Lance's left-sided opinion from the left field, I think maybe this is an opportunity to kind of embarrass Gable, kind of let him think, oh yeah, you're not up there, because yeah, you can go one-on-one Gunther, but when it comes to Imperium as a whole, we're going to beat you down. We remember how you embarrassed our ring generally last couple of weeks with those fake victories by count out and such. So maybe that was just their way of keeping him in the corner and letting him take all the heat. I don't know, man. I think it's still one of those winding stories you got to follow and see how it develops. But if it keeps going this way, then yeah, it's going to lose his credibility. It's going to ruin his projection or momentum that he has.
Well, let me ask you this. To me, it seems like they would be much better in a tag team. I think Otis and Chad Gable are the perfect tag team, because Otis is so big, he could set him up and then Gable could knock him down. If they did some sort of like Otis does a running power slam and then Gable comes off with the moonsault or the diving headbutt for the finish, I think that crowd would pop and everybody would go home happy. Yeah, I mean, because – you know, that's another thing. I'm sorry, bro, but I got to get out there. That double belt, what the hell is wrong with these people? When you have, because the what are the Purple Haze people called? What's their name? Judgment Day. It's not Purple Haze. No, with the Judgment Day, how they have both belts, that just seems, that is the dumbest thing ever. That says to me, in your company, that you have, that it's so lousy that the one team carries both belts. Like, they can beat up everybody on SmackDown and everybody on Raw. It makes no sense, whatever. Give me your thoughts on that. I think it's just dumb. Even what's his name, MJF, who is the world champion. You're supposed to be the best. And then now he holds the Ring of Honor championship with what's his name? I know it's probably leading up to some big story, but that is the dumbest thing I've ever said. Double champions got to be the dumbest thing ever, because it says about your company that everybody's so not good enough that this guy's holding two belts. Go ahead, Lance.
Yeah, so first I'll start with WWE. I'm kind of not a fan of so many belts. I believe there should be the main belt, and there should be the secondary belt, which is the U.S. Intercontinental. There should be one tag team belt, not two tag team belts, because the division isn't that big. And then you can argue for the women's championship, so there should be, I think there should just be one belt for the women's champ. Who's the best woman? Not who's the best woman on Monday, who's the best woman on Friday, you know what I'm saying? But I don't know, man. All this double belting is just everyone trying to jump on Roman Reigns' tracks, you know, since he was a double champ or undisputed champ, and it's cool for a minute, but then you got to realize, like you said, you just it's not watering down the talent, but it's like it's exposing that there's no talent, you know, and you can't be having that when you're a major promotion. You know,
yeah.
It's kind of nonsense. And I'll say the same with the AEW, you know, when you have MJF, who's the world, he's the number one. There is no other number one top tier belt in that industry, I believe, you know. So, like, for him to have that belt and then a secondary tag team championship, like, this man's pulling doubles. And what's the need when you're supposed to be a champ? You're supposed to walk in, walk out, not walk in through the pre-show and then finish off the show on the main
yeah.
event. I don't understand that at all either. So
yeah,
it's not you. It's not an old man thing. It's just a what the heck's going on currently thing, you know?
Because think about it. Do you ever think in your wildest dreams that back in the day, Ric Flair would hold the NWA World Heavyweight Championship and then all of a sudden win the tag belts with Ole Anderson or Arn Anderson or whatever? It would never happen. I've read so many biographies or whatever, and everybody like Jerry Lawler, the people at the Sportatorium in Texas, stuff like that. When Ric Flair was coming to town, he was the champion, and they would have to move from the Sportatorium to the football field or whatever because it would draw so many people. And then Jerry Lawler said, dude, when he would come to town, he would draw so much money that the day he left, I'd be on the phone the next day with the NWA saying, when can we get him back? You know what I mean? You put a tag belt on him. It's like, dude, you know, it just makes no sense whatsoever. And then also, dude, I mean, I love Ring of Honor. I love New Japan, you know, but way too many belts in AEW. You know, Joe's got the Ring of Honor television, and then there's a Ring of Honor tag team chapter. There's a Ring of Honor six-man tag. And then, you know, the world champ with Cesaro and all that. And they're just everybody comes out with a belt nowadays. So, don't you think that they should keep it its own separate, especially when you have three shows, when you have, you know, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday? It seems like you can make Wednesday your big show. And then if you want to put Ring of Honor with them on Saturday and then whatever else on Friday, because they seem to be kind of pushing the Friday show a little bit over to the side or whatever. It seems like that would make more sense, don't you think, than everybody coming out with belts every day?
Oh, yeah, I definitely agree. And now with Punk gone, maybe there is some opportunity, because I heard the reason why, you know, selected talent on Saturday is because Punk was handpicking who gets to be on this show. And that, you know, it takes the booking power away from Tony Khan, because like you said, Tony Khan can spread the wealth evenly between three shows, not even two shows, unless three shows. So you can have like a SmackDown, a Raw, and the ROH kind of, you know what I mean? Like, you can, that way you're not having all these multiple champs on one show. You see Joe over here with one belt. You see him with another belt. You see them with another belt. And it's just like,
yeah,
the water's down. Yeah. The people in the mid-card trying to work their way up to a belt, because you don't even get to hear about them because they're too busy promoting the same guy who has two, three belts at a time. It's kind of ridiculous.
Right, because Joe is the Ring of Honor television champion, and he's going towards the AEW belt. So if he makes it and gets a shot and actually wins the AEW belt, then he'll be the AEW champion and the Ring of Honor television champion or whatever. It just makes no sense. It just, to me, I don't get it. It just, it should be its own separate entity or whatever. Impact has kind of stayed, you know, Impact or whatever. They bring in some guys from New Japan or whatever, but they don't, you know, come with their belts and stuff like that. They kind of keep it separate, which is cool. Bring the talent down or whatever, and then go from there. You know what I mean? You figure it out. And maybe, because a lot of times when they send some people from AEW to New Japan, it's fresh. You know what I mean? It's new. So people are like, dude, they've never seen Cesaro against those guys out there, and he did major damage. I was like, that was a smart move or whatever. So it seems like that would make more sense than to have 15 champions in one division. But anyways, real quick for the people, you're here, you're at Scoop Slam Radio. If you want two scoops, Raisin Bran, we should get a sponsorship from Raisin Bran. We could be two scoops of raisins in each box or whatever. But Michael Parks is in here. He's got stuff going on outside. And, you know, Lance, I talked to Mike, and this is how, what's the word I'm looking for, how passionate he is about the business. He's like, dude, I'm not going to be there today. He goes, because I got a separate gig going, because I'm putting money away, dude. I want to have a big show. I want to bring some big name guys and make it so that we can draw a crowd and the people can see what we're capable of. So when you don't do your own podcast that you pay for because you're working to make money to do your big show, that's got to say something about him as a company owner, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's spreading himself a little too thin if he's supposed to be here on the podcast, but he's making side money. Luckily for him, he's got a team of devoted. Well, he will have a team of one as of next week. But, you know, as for today, he's got a team of people working in the background helping him out, so that way this podcast is still available to the public. That way we can still push the product while he's working behind the scenes, securing the extra funds. So, yeah, it's good that he's working hard towards our next show because he does want to make it a blowout. He does want to make it something special for everybody, and I can't wait to see him. Honestly.
Yeah. What's the name of the guy that we had on last week that came on and the guy on his John sidekick that came on with us? Do you remember his name?
Yeah, we all get the name confused. I call him Big Mike. His name wasn't Mike at all. I totally dropped the ball on that one. But, our guest last week, he was very insightful, had some good news with us, you know what I'm saying? He's well-educated, to say the least.
The ratings were two percentages, which is a lot, you know, and I'll screenshot and show it to you. The ratings went up when we had the news segment, had him on and talked about, you know, the latest stuff going on and in the world of wrestling. So, you know, maybe people do want to hear a little bit about the company, about what's going on, and they get right into wrestling in general, you know, to talk about it or whatever. So maybe we do need to have some more people like that on that are a little bit more educated in the world of wrestling that actually keep up with it and stuff like that. So congrats to Michael Parks and Scoopy Scoop Slam Radio because they went up another two digits in the ratings. So like I said, when we went off the air last week, we've come a long way from clams 189 at AOL.com. So big ups to Scoop Slam Radio for that. But that's the thing, you know, people, when Mike and I first sat down, he said, look, this is what I want to do for a podcast or whatever. And we talked about it. People don't get this. They just see the finished product, dude. They don't see what comes, you know, behind the scenes and stuff like that. So this is the forum to do that. That's why I bring that up. That's why I'm saying, look, man, it's not all, what's it called? Butterflies and roses or whatever. Mike actually has to take this time off to go do another gig that's well paying so that he could put money into the company because he wants to bring a better show. So people don't see that. They just see the show and they're like, oh, you know, whatever's whatever. But this is what it takes to get you to the next level, right?
Yeah, and for anybody who's listening, like, aren't in the business, yeah, these things aren't just handed to us. It's not like, oh, here's a venue, here's some investors. You know, it costs to be the boss. You know what I'm saying? You got to put in that money to get that result. And that's what we do when we're not promoting, when we're not busy running the streets. You know, we're making that money so we can build a better product each and every month or every time we run a show. So like I said earlier, big respect to Mike. Like I said, he can't be here today, but he's here in the iconosphere somewhere in the universe making that happen for the next show. And you got nothing but respect for that kind of work because nothing's handed to you. You know, Michael Parks, that's his promotion. That's his way. That's his, you know, it's very personal. It's very possessive, you know what I'm saying? And it's not a negative connotation at all. It's just showing that he's working for his, opposed to having a handout and waiting for someone to make it work for him.
Well, let's put it this way, because I got to take a quick break to reset and stuff. So I'll leave you with this question, and you can let that marinate while I go to commercial. Who do you think we could bring? Okay, let's say, I'm say $2,000 we have set aside to bring somebody over. To bring a big name that's going to draw so that people will see that we can. I'm a big believer in, let's say we bring Bandito. I'm a big believer in bringing Bandito to go against somebody from here in SoCal to see that our people can hang with somebody that's a big name like Bandito or Black Darus or something like that. So think about that real quick. Who you think would be the best draw if we brought somebody over that would make the most money? And we'll come back right after this. Hang on, everybody. We'll be right back. Scoop Slam. Scoop.
Sounds Drive. Sounds Drive.
That's it. The great Dustin Rhodes. Let's stop talking about it because I'm ready for it. But you're here at Scoop Slam Radio. Got my man Lance Winters with me hanging out. Lance Bully from Lance Bully Zone. And myself, Michael Parks, not here because he's working, because he wants to bring, he's taking extra gigs and putting extra money away because he wants to bring somebody down and do a huge show. Now, I could tell you what we tossed around real quick, Lance, while you're thinking of who you think would draw money. We talked to Bestia and Mecha Wolf, which is the Rebellion Amarillo, who've been doing really well. They, you know, they wrestled at the Crash against Mustache Mountain, which is Tyler Bateman and I forget the other guy's name, but they, man, they put, when you, whoever's promoting over there or matchmaking, to think of that, to bring Mustache Mountain down to go against Mecha Wolf and Bestia was amazing. You know, it's like, dude, that, who would think of that? And it was a match and a half, you know? So so then they ended up progressing from there and becoming the NWA World Tag Team Champions, which is huge, you know, in its own right. So we talked about that, and we talked about specific prices and stuff, and then we even considered making a deal to bring Halloween out of retirement. So we would bring Bestia, Mecha Wolf, Damien, and Halloween out here. And he was like, you know, bro, you know, you got Mecha Wolf and them that are with the newer crowd, and then you have Damien and Halloween, who's with the older crowd that know these guys or whatever. Maybe that'll draw. We kind of put that on the back burner for a minute, so we're tossing it around. So I think that's good, but, I mean, who do you think we could – you know, I don't particularly care for PWG. I don't, because I have specific heat with specific people who are from there. But regardless of what I think or who, whatever, dude, they do it right. I mean, you watch some of their highlights, and they have, like, Kinoshki Takeshita against Speedball Mike Bailey. You know, and those matches are ridiculous. You know, they brought down Bandito and Flamita and people like that, and I mean, it just burns the house down. So they got the right idea. So, what do you think, Lance? Who do you think would be the person that would really draw some money if we brought him down?
Oh man, it's like a definitely loaded question. There's so many people that I want, so many people under contract, and there's so many of these people that I've already seen live and in person. So it's like hard to pick and choose, because you can have Brian Cage come on down like he did. You have people that just came out of retirement, like Douglas James. I don't know if you heard about that. He came out of retirement this weekend. And
I did.
He did not miss a step. He did not miss a step. He's been gone for 2.5 years. I saw the clips, and he's a killer. So I'm not saying he's worth $4,000, but he's definitely worth the price if you want to bring someone that could go toe-to-toe with someone like Rickster or something, for example, because those are two high-flying, strong competitors. Bengala, someone from Mexico, would be a good draw to see him come on in. And Yeah, I agree with you. With Mecha Wolf, that'd be a huge deal. You know what I mean? They're running things at NWA, and have them come down, that'd be major business. I'm trying to think of who else. Like, I'm trying to think of people, and it's so hard because all the people I want to see are all signed by someone. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Brody King, I've seen him around the Lucha Giant. Oh, my goodness. Like, that man's got speed, power, and the high-flying stats. That's a competitor for sure, you know? So it's all in the works on who's the free agent, who's around. Los Fulgores down in Mexico, I'll give them a shout-out if you guys haven't heard them. Los Fulgores, 1 and 2, bring them both in.
Well, you know who I want to bring, and I think he would, depending on who we put him with, I've been wanting to bring Marty Scurll. I mean, I think that dude is amazing. If you go back and look at, like we talked about before, some of his matches with Zack Sabre Jr., you know, it had everything. And to this day, you know, him and Will Ospreay, when I saw them in person – at the Long Beach Pyramid. I mean, I've been in the business for a long time. It was, if from beginning to end, bro, it was a match and a half. Now, it'd be a little difficult to get Will Ospreay, I'm sure, but, you know, Marty's been, I don't know what the specifics are, but he's been kind of, you know, doing this thing back and forth. He went and worked at AAA for a little while, you know, and then he works out there in England and stuff like that. And he's one of the few people that I would actually pay money to go see. So if we did bring somebody like Marty Scurll, who do you think we could put him with out here?
That would be someone who can match his technical prowess as well as his stuntmanship, you know what I'm saying?
About
booking people against people, let's throw out Sonny Kiss. That's a free agent I can see that could probably hang with him in terms of flexibility and strategy. Sonny Kiss just recently got let go of AEW, so that is somebody that's not under contract anymore. Someone where you throw big bucks at, and I think you can put those two together. I don't think it's happened before, correct me if I'm wrong.
No, and you know what? That, see, ladies and gentlemen, that's why we have Lance on here. Yeah, I think they missed the boat on Sonny Kiss. I think if they would have gave him a specific gimmick, or, you know, maybe as an exotico that they've never seen before in AEW or something like that, he could have drawn money. That, not only his gimmick and all that, but he's got the moves like Jagger. That dude can go. You know, I've actually worked a couple of shows with him, and I've seen him in person. I'm like, man, this guy's got something here, man. That whole gimmick, everything he's got going for him or whatever can be a draw. Now, I think Sonny Kiss versus Marty Scurll would draw major money or whatever. So, Michael Parks, when you get back, let's talk, buddy. Let's make it happen. All right, we're gonna work on that.
And then
the what?
So I hope Mike is listening in right now and he's writing notes as he's working. You know what I mean? Because we're spitting gold right here. We got facts for days.
Yeah, and I'm sure.
Opposed to, you know, dream bookings and dream matchups.
Yeah, I'm sure. Even if he's not, he'll listen to the show afterwards to see, because for VWE they got lucky. Because Pagano missed his flight or something, or didn't have his paperwork in order, and they were going to have him wrestle, and they had Psicosis that was already booked, and just by the luck of the draw, Black Taros and Laredo Kid happened to be at the same hotel. They were waiting. They were going to be off, and they were just waiting to leave for Vegas, you know, the next day. So they said, well, since we're here, dude, we'll definitely come and work, and they got him for dirt cheap. They would even tell me how much that they got him for. But all the stars weren't aligned, so it was Psicosis, Black Taros, and Laredo Kid in the three-way. So they put it out that morning, the morning of the show. And I remember I was at work, and Jessica, who works in a different department, she goes, hey, you know they're bringing Black Taros and Laredo Kid? I said, where? She said, to VW. I go, at Delos? She's like, yeah, let's go. Let's go. So I don't know how to Vimo or Venmo or none of that stuff, so she took care of all that. And the place was packed, and they totally delivered, dude. And one of the best matches I've seen. Psicosis is a little too, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? A little bit slower than them, yeah, or whatever, but they made it work. But especially, you know, you can't go wrong with Black Dottos and Laredo Kid. They put on a show and a half. So it just depends if all the stars are in line and, you know, if they're in town and if they're going to do a double or something like that, and you can pick them up would help even more. See, it's another thing that people don't see, you know, the behind the scenes. If you can catch them, you know, like that, you know, they have a layover, so they'll yeah, dude, we'll come work. That happened with me with the brothers. Oh my god, I swear I have Alzheimer's disease. The ones that one of them just passed away from Ring of Honor. Help me out.
The Briscoes.
I'll tell you. I need some ginkgo biloba or whatever it's called. The Briscoes were staying at a they had worked for PWG. They were staying at a hotel, and they were just going to be kicking back because their flight didn't leave till the next day. And I had a show, and it was a certain, I don't want to put his name out there because I don't want him to get in trouble. Who knows? It was Biggie Biggs. He goes, hey, bro, the Briscoes are here, and, you know, they'll work for a specific price if you want to use them. I'm like, absolutely, man, let's do it or whatever. But PWG told him, no, bro, we paid for your flights. We paid for your hotel. I'm sorry, but, you know, you can't go work there or whatever because we took care of it, which
make
is
more
understandable.
Money. Makes no sense.
Yeah, which is understandable from that thing if I'm paying for you guys to come down or whatever. But on the other hand, if you're just going to be there, you know, and then again, the company I was working for was in no way compete with PWG. So you should have been comfortable in your company. Absolutely, dude, if you can make a few extra bucks, you know, before you leave, go right ahead. But it just didn't happen. So it was close, and nice guys. I got to meet him and talk to him, and super nice to me, or whatever. It's a shame that we weren't able to use him, but, you know, business is business, so that's what happens. But anyways, oh my goodness, I'm gonna take another quick break so we can see if Alan Goes can call in. If he does, cool. We'll talk some MMA, some jiu-jitsu, and stuff like that. If not, we'll continue on with our little discussion here. So we'll be right back after this. Hang on, everybody. At least I got us more than 15 minutes.
Why, hello there, and welcome.
Soundstripe.
Soundstripe. I had to send Alan Go as a text, so I wasn't able to put up a Dusty Rhodes quote of the day. But you're at Scoop Slam Radio. I got my man Lance with me. No Michael Parks today because he has other endeavors as he tries to progress in his company. Last show for Fabiano because he's moving on to, I would say I'm moving on to greener pastures or whatever, but I'm just going to be honest, I'm working. I mean, we were so busy at my shoot job that it's like I'm just coming home and barely got in a workout and then had to run up real quick so we could do the show. So anyways, Lance, we'll talk a little bit about that. And now that we got, hopefully as we wait for Alan Goez, this is another thing that I'm talking about. When we first started working for Tap Out, this is Sergio and I, Sergio the Unholy, who I was married to for many years. We tagged for, met. We actually, Sergio and I were scheduled to wrestle Damien Halloween for Rev Pro. And I don't know what happened, but they put me with Durango Kid against Damien Halloween, and they put Sergio with Fubi, and they wrestled against the Chivos, you know, Cayam and Enigma de Oro. So they go out there, and they're wrestling and stuff like that. So Enigma picks up Unholy, slams him, but he turns him over on his belly, and Cayam comes and gives him a sentón right on his back. And instead of coming up and meeting him a little bit, he was just flat, dude. And I heard every vertebrae and just crack. I swear to God, I thought he broke his back. It just went, oh, shit. So we finished the match. He goes, I go, dude, I go, are you okay? He goes, what happened? I go, he hit you with the sentón right on the back. He goes, yeah. He goes, he actually did it just right to my spine, went back into alignment, and I felt better. Oh my God! I thought you were dead, but anyways, so that we were wrestling and stuff like that, and then all of a sudden, as he called me one day and said, "Bro, you know we're getting old," and dude, we were like 35 or whatever. I said, "Bro, we're getting old, and you know we need to do something else." He said, "So I'm taking classes for broadcasting. I want to start doing a radio show, not a podcast, a radio show." And I'm like, "Absolutely, bro!" So it started as pro wrestling. And then it morphed into mixed martial arts, which was hot at the time because De La O was wrestling for King or fighting for King of the Cage, and his black belt Thomas Kenny was, you know, fighting for King of the Cage, and they liked our stuff. Dude, I called Terry, the owner of King of the Cage. I'm like, bro, we're doing a radio show. Send me a 30-second spot. We'll promote it. He goes, you know what, bro? I only have one, and it's in Palm Springs. You guys think you can drive over there and go pick it up? Hey, driving to Palm Springs and go pick it up, you nuts. So anyways, we kept going from there. And then what happened was Tap Out, Mike Guyman, who was actually fighting for King of the Cage, and my phone's going out, but it's not Alan Goez. He said, hey, bro, I can't make it, but I'm sending the Tap Out crew. I've been working with these guys from Tap Out. And I'm like, dude, we totally know who they are. They're just really started getting out there, and everybody in MMA was trying to come up and get it to the forefront because this is before, you know, it hit the big time. So they came and they locked their stuff. But anyways, I'm going to try to make a long story short. Charles, the owner, he pulled me to the side and he goes, bro, he goes, I think you got something here, man. He goes, you guys, you know, it wasn't just a show. It had some comedy. It had some, and you guys knew what you were talking about. Do you want to come work for us? And in my mind, I'm thinking, I'm trying to be cool. Go, you know what? Yeah, man. In my mind, I'm going, yes. I told Sergio, I go, yes. So we met Charles at the Huntington Beach and talked to him for a while. And he said, you know, because it, another long story, you know, with the Mexican accent, you know, I went to school to lose it so that I could do announcing for MMA, and I ended up being King of the Cage announcer and all that. And we were totally not as funny without the accent. That was the funny part or whatever. So he's like, bro,
cool, yeah.
you don't ever come out of character. He goes, I don't care if you speak perfect English or whatever, you stay in that character. I don't care who you're with, who we're talking to, you 24/7, you live that character. And I'm like, oh, you know, all right, cool, man. So we kept that going, and it parlayed into, you know, that. But the point I'm trying to make is we learned so much from him. And this is what I'm trying to pass on to some of the other people that I work with. You know, Sergio came one day. We used to go do WEC in Vegas. And we went to the warehouse and we were gonna take our own truck because they were gonna go in the big trailer. They were gonna pick up another fight or whatever. So we're talking, and Sergio walks up with his tap out shirt, and he had been putting it in a dryer, so it turned from black to like gray, like grayish or whatever. So Charles comes in and he looks at Sergio and he goes, "Dude," he goes, "What the heck is this?" And he goes, "What's up with that shirt, man?" And he goes, "I don't know." He goes, "Man, you be wearing that dingy ass shit. What's wrong with you?" So he goes, "You guys head out." He goes, "You guys head out. I'm gonna send you some stuff." They put us up in the Mandalay Bay, or whatever. You know, this is how much they trust us. They foolish enough to give us a credit card. Okay, we didn't take advantage of it, but we said, "There's a dude. We ain't in that McDonald's. We're gonna go here and there." But we did it. We didn't take it. But they gave us the credit card, pay for the room, and do you know our amenities and stuff like that. So we get there, we get cleaned up and stuff. We're gonna go down and do a live broadcast at the fight shop. So somebody knocks at the door. It's one of the workers from Tap Out, and he goes, "Hey, what's up, man?" And then he goes, "I got some stuff for you." It was, you know, those big army duffel bags, the huge, big canvas army duffel bags. He drops it on the thing, and it's a note, and it's from Charles, the owner. And he says, "I don't ever want to see you guys looking dingy like that again." Dude, he sent us shirts, hats, socks, shorts, and not one or two. He sent us like six pair each or whatever, just complete, total brand new stuff. And so when we met him later the next day at the WEC, he goes, "Yeah, bro, if you need something, you call me and I'll send it to you. Don't ever come with that dingy shit again. If you're representing me, you're going to be in Tap Out brand new from head to toe," or whatever. So that's the kind of person that he was. You know, we learned so much from him. You know, he's like, you stay in character. You make sure that the clothes that you have on are, you know, fresh, iron, crisp, because people look at you and go, "Dude, that's a professional thing," or whatever. So you kind of see what I'm saying, how I parlay that into the business of wrestling to try to talk to some of these people that run companies. You kind of get what I'm saying, Lance?
Yeah, you gotta mix the business, not interchange the business, but you know, you gotta put a little bit of this, put a little bit of that for a collaborative effort, because that's gonna bear some very unique fruits. You know what I'm saying? So I definitely agree with what you're saying.
Yeah, but back then he was saying, you know, people think that people that are in the fight game are just a bunch of animals, you know, so we got to bring a serious side to the business as well as, you know, be different and be playful. That's why we wear the makeup. Little things, dude, he would send us with these fluorescent, like bright fluorescent orange shirts, you know, to wear to the with those conventions, you know, and stuff like that. And we're like, "Dude," he goes, "You know what? They're going to be able to spot you from a mile away." He goes, "You see, I have Skyscrape." He was like 6'8", 6'9", and he wore that big wig or whatever. He goes, you see him from miles away, and you go, "Oh, dude, there's Tap Out." You know, he goes, "They see these fluorescent bright orange shirts. They see the Tap Out logo on it." He goes, "They could spot you from a mile away." He goes, "That's the way you get out there." So it was just one lesson after another, you know, and he was right. People could see from a while, "Hey, what's up, man? Oh, we got a live broadcast coming. Oh, dude, let me send one of my fighters." Absolutely. You know what I mean? So that's how that worked out like that. So the point I'm trying to make, Lance, since, you know, I'm gonna pass the ball over to you so that you can run with it. Mike's going to block for you because of his size, but you're going to have the ball and you're going to run with it. Because, Lance, what's the first thing when they say, "Hey, bro," like we go to somebody's halls or whatever, we want to do a pro wrestling show here. What's the first thing they say?
They come to a pro wrestling show and they want to do a hall? They say,
"Yeah,
what's there going on?" They want to see the fruit. They want to see what's coming out. They want to see.
Yeah.
You got to reword that one for me. I'm a little lost in the sauce right there with my own feelings.
Well, they'll go, "Oh, you mean that fake stuff?" Or no, man, it's
yeah,
wrestling. It's lucha, bro. We go ahead.
So yeah, now see, because I'm so deep in the game, I forget. That's like one of the first things people, newcomers, say. "Oh, isn't that fake?" And I'm like, "Would you like me to pile drive you?" But I've pile driven people before, and I've botched pile drivers, and I've broken necks. I'll let them know, you know, like, "I think wrestling's fake. Come scrap with me. I'm only 6'2". 140, but I'll get you gassed out and tapped out in a matter of minutes, because this wrestling isn't the game.
Right.
The most common thing I tell people is like, "Show me how you fall 10 feet on your back, how you can fake that."
Yeah.
You know what I mean? With all the bumps and all the extreme stuff that we go through, because not many people are willing to even take a back bump. people right. know how to safely take a back bump, but they want to say wrestling's fake. Like, bro, wait
right.
until you get slammed. Until you're in a situation where your Styles hits his crash on you and you tuck your head instead of pulling out, you know what I mean? I'll show you what fake's all about, man. Let me show you that D-Lo Brown powerbomb. Let me show you what fake's all about. And I'm not trying to show the dangerous side of wrestling, but it's real. Even the cardio, you know, try going 15 minutes with a guy.
Yeah, even the ropes. If you hit the ropes the wrong way, or you fall a certain way, and hit like the back of your neck on them ropes, dude, you won't even be able to. You have to go in the slow lane all the way home because you can't turn your neck to see the cars coming in the next lane. But it, which is a good example, because a lot of people give Dello a hard time. You know, he is, and just to be honest, he's kind of hard to work with or whatever. That's just, believe me, I worked with him for over 20 years or whatever. But he's the one, which is a good example, is Nicolette. He's the one who said, hey, why don't you have Nicolette bring out the Mexican flag or whatever? And I'm like, yeah. And it just took off. I mean, people were like, bro. So then, you know, I said, if you're going to be a manager or you're going to be a valet or whatever, you got to learn to take a bump or whatever. So she said, yeah, I think I want to wrestle too. And I went like this, hold on. And hold on. That was a whole different ballgame. Yeah, we had to start, you know, taking bumps and learning to run the ropes and all that, which she did. You know, she had to. We had to go to Dello's and work just on the fundamentals, you know, so that she could learn how to take a bump and stuff like that. So that's the point I'm trying to make. You know, it is sports entertainment, but it's been my goal to keep everything professional so that people take it serious. You know, look, that's why I'm such a New Japan fan, bro. You know, they have it on the news, and people take it seriously. And if you go to Japan, you know, if you don't have your A game, they're going to eat you alive, bro. Look at Hulk Hogan. When he went to Japan, he wrestled. He had to wrestle and work. You know, he didn't just go out there and go do a leg drop and he's out of there. He had to do actual work. And you have, if you want to be a wrestler in Japan, you have to pay your dues. You got to be a young boy. You're going to wear black trunks, and you're not going to have your gimmick till they say you have your gimmick. That's why it's so successful, and that's why people take it so seriously. You get that? But Lance, if we try to do something like that here, what do you think would happen?
Nobody would want to play ball. They'd realize, oh, this is a little too much work. I just wanted to wear my shiny gear and work the crowd or whatever, not even knowing how to work the crowd, but what they think is working the crowd. And I've seen people, I'm trying to shake the ropes and get a reaction. Everyone's like, what's this guy doing? He ain't even moving the ropes right. You don't know what he's doing. Trying to be Ultimate Warrior, you look like a warrior. Just did a loose one thing.
Ultimate fool.
Watch it.
Yeah, they don't.
Yeah, there you go,
it,
the ultimate fool over here thinking that you're living out your life.
Yeah, well, anyways, right. I shot Alan Go as a text, and I had a feeling it was going to happen, bro, because they're right in the middle of training and stuff like that. Plus, he's got a big seminar coming up, so he's got to be getting ready for that. So let me take another quick break, and there's one more thing I want to run by you real quick, Lance, and then if you want to get to a little bit of news or whatever, we'll do that, all right?
Sounds good.
Okay, hang on. Dude, I couldn't put a Dusty Rhodes quote on because my mom texted. She just got back from Big Bear, and it was she got a sore throat, so I wasn't able to put the Dusty Rhodes thing up. But for the people listening to this, you're here. You're at Scoop Slam Radio. If you want two scoops of Raisin Bran, come to Scoop Slam Radio. We'll take care of you. I got my man Lance over here. Michael Parks is out. He's working. He's trying to bring you guys a good show, so we wish him well. But we'll get to the news, but give me your thoughts on this, because there's a certain wrestler that, used to work at Disneyland parking cars or working in the parking lot or whatever. And he kept putting away his money and putting away his money. And people were like, dude, you know, spend some of that money or do, you know, what are you doing? And why are you parking cars? And he's like, man, I got something in mind or whatever. So he kept putting his money away, putting the money away. So New Japan came out and said, look, if you fly yourself out here, if you can bring yourself out here for a week, we'll give you a tryout. We'll see what you look like, you know, and we'll go from there. So this person said, dude, this is what I've been waiting for. He bought his round trip tickets to Japan with hotel, everything, you know, good to go, took some money with him, you know, so he can have money to spend or whatever. So when he got out there, the first day when they all met up to train or whatever, he said there was maybe six of them or whatever. And they said, for you, now we know who wants it and who doesn't. For you to be able to save your money, bring yourself out here, pay for your own hotel, and come down here means you really want to be a wrestler. You know what I mean? That you're serious. So we're going to put you through some paces. We're going to see what you look like. He ended up staying for 3 months. They kept him. He trained. He became a young boy. He refereed some big matches, and he's still a young boy now, but you kind of get, I mean, that's a smart move. You see who really wants to do it. If you did that here, if you said, hey, well, we'll go ahead and train you, but, you know, you're going to pay for a week's, what do you call it, and you got to pay for your own hotel. Dude, do you think we'd even have two people?
Hard to say. I don't think it depends on where you're going, you know, because there is New Japan here in the U.S., but major U.S. brands here that I can think of, besides going to Florida for the developmental of NXT or WWE, maybe. I don't know. I can't list any promotions out here, any schools out here that are that top-notch, you know, unless you can name one or two.
You could be the top school in the nation. They ain't coming. They're going to say, no, if I'm spending my money, I want to be trained, and in 3 weeks I want to be on my first show, and in 6 weeks I want to be main event. Or whatever, and I want $150 a show for my first match.
That's not going to happen out here.
Exactly, but go ahead. I got a little bit of time for you, so I know you want to get to some news. Anything major happening in the wonderful world of pro wrestling?
WWE last Monday they dropped the ball once again. It's 9/11. No Zelina Vega. Just honorable as heck, you know what I'm saying? You know, everyone knows the history about Zelina Vega's dad was a firefighter during the 9/11 attacks, and it's 9/11 again. It's like 3 years in a row now where they don't showcase her, don't have her doing nothing. Don't tell me she's a SmackDown superstar, because you've seen so many SmackDown people go to Raw people go to SmackDown. You couldn't fit her in one way or another, have her represent somewhere or another. No, it's lame. The last time she was addressed on the WWE was the pandemic era, where there's no fans, there's no one out there cheering for her and stuff. So, yeah, they dropped the ball once again. It's cool that she had her moment in Backlash in Puerto Rico. That was a big up for her, you know, getting to represent her peoples and whatnot, going up against Rhea Ripley. We didn't get any of that. Instead, we got what we got, which is, you know, a handful of this and that. Some day coming out was cool. Oh, I'm sorry.
Why do you think they do that, though?
They don't care. WWE's listening right now. Okay. You guys just book what you want and you just have it your way, like McDonald's.
It's like the boss, you know, or whatever, says, you know what, that's a good idea, but I ain't doing it because what I say goes. You know, whatever. You know, dude, send the people home happy, man. People would love to see that, and they'd be like, bro, nope, we're going to do what we want. There's particular things that I've seen where paperwork and stuff where it says, do not approach this person if you see them backstage. Do not. And it's like, come on, man. Dana White is a good example, man. That dude, he's just upfront. You know what I'm saying? He'll tell you. He'll go, you know what, dude? I run this company. This is what I want to do. And that's that. I'm not going to sugarcoat anything. You know what I'm saying? This guy looked, he goes, in his last prank, you got to watch some of those press conferences, dude, because he tells it like it is. He goes, you know what? If you're going to, I give you the chance, you come out here and you tip tap somebody to death, I'm going to send you home. I'm going to send you home. You got to want it here or whatever. You know, so to me, it seems like they should just be more like that. You know what? It's really great, Zelina Vega, that this was your dad and this happened, but we're going to do this. Okay. So don't even count on it, or don't even get your hopes up or something. At least she knows. You know, it's just like wrestling, Lance. When I do a show and people, I don't hear from them, and then an hour before the show starts, I find out that they're not coming. You know, I'll call them and I'll go, dude, even if you lie to me, just call and let me know, dude. Then at least I know you're not coming and I can make do. You know, it has not been one show that has not happened to me. So I think WWE should be upfront and say, this is what we're doing. And if you don't like it, too bad. What do you think?
I mean, there's a bunch of fake guys and whatnot, and how wrestling's not real. And like, this is one of the realest examples of it, because no one wants to be a man, look you in the face and say, no, I'm not booking you. No, you're not going to be here. And, you know, feelings get hurt, feathers get ruffled, and you know what? That's what you got to do. I mean, unfortunately, like, what do you want me to do?
Yeah.
I mean, I myself consider myself as the guy who walks on tiptoe and walks on eggshells around people. Like, I'll tell AJ Mata to his face. I mean, I don't got a problem with him. I don't need to go on Facebook, Twitter, and all that crap to go tell him how I feel. You know, he's listening right now probably, and he knows that I'll look him in the eye any day and tell him I don't like him. It ain't about, oh, AJ Mano's over here at Lucha Libre Alliance. I got to tiptoe around. He's at UWC. I got to tiptoe around. Nah. I was in that locker room at that last UWC show. I said, yo, man, like you don't like me, so you strike me first. I'm a costume match. I told him straight up. I was refereeing that night. He didn't put a hand on me. So there's some mutual respect in that aspect, you know. But it's not like I was scared of him the whole time. Not like I was on the other side of the locker room just eyeballing him. But then he looked at me. I'm looking at the floor. None of that stuff. And I think we need to bring that. Not legitimacy, but that manhood back, you know, that trait of, like, I'm going to tell you how it is. You can go out into the back and figure it out, or we can just shake hands. Or you're not even shake hands, but just have a mutual understanding, a mutual agreement that it is what it is.
And people, I think people will have more respect for you, you know, when you do that than not. You know what I mean? I mean, just be real, bro. I mean, just whatever. You get something happens. But that's what happened to Koto Hiro. Put something out and he said, I'll wrestle anybody. I don't care who you are. I don't care what style you are or whatever, you know, I'm totally down. So I didn't know if it was a work or not or whatever. So I instant messaged him like, dude, I'll take that. I go, and I'll pay your booking fee or whatever. He's like, just tell me when and where, bro. Tell me when and where. And he was there, dude. No BS about it. He was true. Ah, you know what?
He just called me too. So it's fine. We're still here. We're still live at Scoop Slam Radio.
Hold on. I'm going to tell him to call that. Alan Goas called you?
Oh, he called me? No, someone else called me.
Who's calling you? Hold on.
I just called you right now at 8:05 trying to run a podcast. Okay.
Hold on. Okay, I sent him the number to call, so he might call in real quick. If he does, we'll get him on for like 15 minutes or so, just so he can plug his.
Come on, Favi. I thought you're gonna be a man, and I thought we just talked about this. You're gonna be a man, so I'm getting this time slot.
You know what?
Good luck.
If you ain't ready at 7:45, if you ain't ready at 7:45, you ain't coming over. Hold on, that's him. Let me get the. You know what? That's how it is where I go get my tattoos. It's all, you know, Mexican Chicanos and stuff like that. And we're getting tattooed. And that's how we do. You know what, man? My wife, hold on a second. My wife don't tell me what to do. Hold on a second. Hello, you're live on the radio. Is this Alan Goes?
That's Alan Goes.
Hey,
house.
Alan Goes, it's your friend Fabiano. How are you, my friend?
How you doing, brother?
Dude, it's funny because we've been talking about you before you called in, and I was telling – I got Lance here with me. Lance is one of my radio sidekicks that's been with me for a while now, but we were talking about it, and I was telling him, I said, you know, Alan Goes is coming on, and that dude is the real deal. So I want to talk about your seminar real quick, but I gotta tell you, it's been so long since we saw you. It was back when you were in, I think, Mission Viejo, and the kids were little.
They were running around the mats.
And I look at you now, and these kids are grown, and they're taking jiu-jitsu. But anyways, we had a live broadcast for Tap Out Radio, and then we rolled a little bit with you. And I was telling them, I said, Sergio and I were big fat Marranos back then, and I had Alan Goes in cross-side position. And I had him under my left arm under his neck, and I had a gable grip. And in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, dude, I got this guy. I got him. I said, before I can blink, I think it was the ghost escape or something, but you turned around and swept me. And before I knew it, I was like, oh, my. I never forgot that day, and I never stopped telling that story or whatever. And I go, Alan Goins is the real deal. He called me on the air and said, hey, you know, Henzo and I are supposed to go at it. And I'm like, gee, no gee. He goes, gee, no gee, doesn't matter or whatever. But, you know, you can progress so much into Tuva jiu-jitsu or whatever. But to this day, when people tell me, hey, bro, you know, I want to go to the next level and get some better, I go, you got to go see Alan Goins. I said, that dude's the real deal or whatever. So real quick, before we talk about the seminar, how is everything over at Tuva Jiu-Jitsu?
Man, it's amazing, dude. Tuva is this gear brand that we build, that now we sponsor a group of people here that doing jiu-jitsu, you know. That's been a really fun time, you know. Now we spreading my net into jiu-jitsu with new gears, you know, like gloves, MMA gloves, helmet, headgear, and short shirts and things like that. You know, that's just to bring back to the community, you know, all my appreciation, my respect, you know, and bring the high quality materials back into this game, you know. And I've been working with such a high caliber group over here at Tuva that be helping me building and put this together, you know. That's been an amazing journey, you know.
Well, I hope it does and it progresses, because there's nobody on this earth that's paid more dues than Alan Goins. There was a show called Passing the Guard back in the day. It was on Channel 56 in Anaheim, and George Brazil was the host, and he would show these Vale Tudo fights from Brazil, Lance, and it was Alan Goins, and they just wore the little calzoncillos and gloves, and that was it, man. They would go at it, and Alan Goins was one of the first people I saw in there, and man, that was the no holds barred days. You remember those days, Alan?
Of course, man. That's like memory. That's ingrained in my brain.
So when somebody
Hey, imagine it. Hey, back in the day, nobody knew nothing about Brazilian jiu-jitsu, right? Now, I have a lot of experience like this, you know. We all wear a little speedo, you know, and we grapple and we choking people out and beating people up. But a lot of times when I used to have a gym, you know, a lot of people walk into the gym, they go, yeah, I'm looking for Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Then they walk in, they look at us. Everybody on the speedo, all sweaty, rolling around one on top of the other. They kind of look at us, go, okay, I think I got in the wrong place. I look for Brazilian jiu-jitsu. I go, this is here, man. This is here, Brazilian jiu-jitsu. They see a bunch of kids on the speedo. He probably be thinking, man, I think I'm going back to kung fu. He goes, no. That's okay, man. I'm living. I think I'm going back to traditional again.
They go, you know? I'll be because back, and then they never show up.
But, yeah, I'll be back. This is jiu-jitsu. This is jiu-jitsu. I got to show up on my speedo and roll with you guys on top of me. Okay, great. I'm not doing it.
But
this has happened tons of times, man. This happens all the time. A lot of people show up in the gym. And one time, with me, Costa, and all the boys training over there, I told Costa, hey, Costa, we got to close the gym and let nobody get in, because the American people don't know yet jiu-jitsu, man. Let's show, when I open my doors, most of the time I used to have a gi. You know, when we were training no gi, I used to close the door, because a lot of people walk in and go, what the hell is this? Why this guy's rolling sweating all over each other? You know what I mean? For us, it was such a common thing, because for us, we go, dude, we're samurai killer. We're killing people. But for the naive eyes, for the ignorant eyes, he didn't know anything. You know what I mean? He don't know he could be dead.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Alan Goins has been doing this for a long time, and nobody's paid more dues than him. But he has a big, and a lot of people. Let me tell you something. I've worked for, you know, Tap Out. I worked for Ed Suarez with Sinister, and then I moved over to On the Mat with Scotty Nelson and them. And both of them called me and said, hey, you know, Alan Goez is doing a seminar at the Machida. And I'm like, what? And yes, but you got to get him promoted and get it out there. So that's how serious it is when somebody like this is coming. So it's going to be Saturday, September 23rd. It's going to be from 2 to 5 p.m. It's going to be at the Machida Karate Academy. It's at 2433 Narbonne Avenue in Lomita, California. If you want more information, if you want to come down, I highly recommend that you come to this seminar. You can call 424-347-7255. I'll give that number and everything at the end so that you guys can go. Well, talk a little bit about that, because you're going to be showing, you know, fighting from the guard, or what are you going to be showing at this seminar?
Man, I'm going to bring the fear and of jiu-jitsu, because jiu-jitsu today is being lost in MMA. Right, the translation of jiu-jitsu. Because what is jiu-jitsu is about? Jiu-jitsu today is being applied. A lot of people playing the top game. But jiu-jitsu, if you remember back on the day when we first started, the beauty of jiu-jitsu, you fight from your back and submit your opponent. That's how Royce Gracie start. That's how I start. That's how Minotauro, Murillo, myself, you know, Carlos Barreto, all those pioneers, that's where we start. Because the jiu-jitsu, the art of jiu-jitsu, is learning to fight on your back. Because fight on top, everybody's a lion when they're on top. But I want to see you a lion when you are on your back, and learn how to be a lion on your back and strike your opponent from your back. And this seminar would be good for many strikers that today have no idea what they're doing when they find themselves on their back, because they don't have the foundation of the jiu-jitsu guard, of the jiu-jitsu of Carson Gracie jiu-jitsu for mixed martial arts. And that's what I'm trying to bring back, so people educate themselves, because like you see many fights today, the guy fall on their back, they lost. Look at Dos Santos, the Brazilian guy. The Brazilian guy in the last UFC, when he fell on his back, he got knocked out. But when he fell on his back, he used his guard really good, really quick, full effective.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But if you see 99% of the people doesn't do that.
Yeah. Well, I for
you
the
know,
people
that's
listening to
bring
us,
me back.
Yeah, for the people listening to us here, I highly recommend that you go when you can. When you have a 310-pound Marrano on top of you, fully side control and locked in the gable grip, and within a blink of an eye, boom, you get swept and you end up on your back. This guy is the real deal. So you definitely have to go and check it out. So we're running up against the clock, but you know, I'm making an effort, Alan, to go down there to do a live broadcast. So because the people have been asking, hey man, you know, we haven't heard from him. Can you get him on so that we could talk a little bit more about, you know, the olden days and coming up and, you know, taking Sakuraba to the limit, which to this day people still think, you know, hey, he won. And people even said, what about when he fought Mark Coleman? That was a big challenge for him. So we definitely got to get you on the air. So I'm trying to get down there to make a live broadcast, and then we'd love to cover the seminar so people could check it out, and definitely for sure. So we're definitely going to try to get everybody down there so we could see you in person. All right, my friend?
Absolutely, brother. It would be my pleasure. It would be an honor to have you guys here. It would be a lot of fun. Look forward to have you here soon.
Well, although I'm a little bit lighter now, I'm about 305 now, so I lost about 5 pounds. Can we do that position just one more time? I think if I get it locked, I just want to see, because you did it so fast, I want to see how we can do it. So I look forward to it. Hey, for sure. I already went down to the academy and told them I want to come down. They said, hey, let's work something out, so we should be able to cover it live. So for the people listening, Alan Goez, big seminar coming up Saturday, September 23rd. He's going to be there from 2 to 5 p.m. It's at the Machida Karate Academy. I'll keep everybody posted so that they can make sure and come down and check it. I look forward to seeing you, my friend. It's been a long time.
Amazing, brother. Amazing. Good talking to you. God bless you and the family and everybody out there.
Yeah, for sure. We definitely look forward to seeing you at Alan Goez. Big seminar coming up at Machida Karate Academy. We'll see you then. All right, my friend. A million thank yous for coming on, and I'll see you soon, okay?
See you soon, brother. Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Alan Goez, everybody. We'll be right back after this. Hang on.
Soundstripe. Soundstripe.
Lance, you see, he never forgot that big 300-pound Marrano on top, and he was able to sweep him or whatever. But I was hoping. But when you're Lance Bully Zone, you got so many things going on. I was hoping Lance could go down there with me to cover, so he could see in person a big fat Marrano that has somebody fully locked and get swept or whatever. But of course, he's got other things going on. So I talked to Mike and I said, hey, maybe we could use this show as a vehicle. If I do a live broadcast, we can upload it and you guys can put it on here. So that's what we're working on. So I look forward to it, man. I'm telling you, Lance, I'm an old man. I've known these people from the beginning. Once Del O got us into jiu-jitsu, it just led to us meeting all these different people and, you know, going to Mission Viejo and getting pulled over twice because we rode TJ's and stuff like that. So I'm hoping, you know, regardless of what happens, Lance, I'm hoping I can bring, because I used to have, Cody was one of the nurses that worked with me, and I called him Cody Rhodes, and he knew nothing about judo, jiu-jitsu, whatever, and he started producing for On the Mat, and we had such a good time, man. You know, we always would go out to these live broadcasts, and, you know, we'd do the seminars and check them out and put them on the air and then go eat afterwards, and it's just a good time. It's the MMA world is completely different from the pro wrestling world. Pro wrestling, everybody's about themselves and they want to get out there and don't, you better not do this to me because I'm not going to like it and I'm going to shoot on you. The MMA jiu-jitsu world is completely different because these guys know they could twist you up in a hot second, so they just relax and everybody has a good time. So hopefully, you know, after this one, I can bring you in. Yeah, and we can do some of these or whatever and just have a good time. So sorry about that, Lance. I had to get him in there, man, because I'm going to go cover this, and it's going to help this show as well as myself. I mean, I'm not going to lie, to get us up there. So I definitely would like to bring you into that world. So for the people in this, don't forget, go check out the seminar. It's going to be at Machida Academy. And Lyoto Machida, you want me to tell you a quick story before we get out of here about Lyoto Machida?
Tell me a quick story before we get out of here.
I was working for Ed Sorres, who is the manager of Anderson Silva, and he has a gym called Black House. So Lyoto Machida is karate-based. You know, he brought a different look to the UFC. He was a light heavyweight champion until John Jones choked him out or whatever. But we were at the Black House, and Ed Sorres and George Brazil, their offices are there. So we're talking and stuff like that, and I see this little black Honda pull up. And Ed looks at, he goes, oh, here comes Lyoto and them. And I go, okay, it's a little four-door Honda. I want to say maybe an Accord, but it was real small. And Lyoto gets out, and then his brother gets out. And then out the back seat, they open the door, and the dad gets out. And the dad, he had to be, I'm going to say, maybe early 70s or so or whatever. And he's got the blue gi on, you know, the jiu-jitsu gi, blue. And it looked like it was 100 years old, like he wore it every day. He had his black belt on. And then he had those hard thongs, you know, the shoes. They were hard, not the rubber ones, but the wooden ones or whatever. I'd look at Ann. I go, these dudes are the real deal, honey. He goes, yeah, man. He goes, they live that 24/7. So he walks up to me, and Ed tells him something in Portuguese or whatever. He says, blah, 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 Faviano. And he puts his hand out, and I shake his hand. It was like shaking Barney Rubble's hand. I mean, it was ridiculous. So he tells him something again in Portuguese, and he opens his gi, and dude, abs, like an eight-pack, like that. Not super skinny, but just like kind of like the Iron Sheik, like that. Like he was big, but he had those abs or whatever. And I look and I go, God dang. So I bow and I shake his hand or whatever. And okay. And they go inside. And I go, dude. And he goes, you know what? They live that every day. He goes, and they don't train on mats. They train on hard wood floors or whatever. He goes, that's why they're so tough. But he said, when Lyoto's getting ready to fight, him and the uncle come down, they cook all his food, they train him, they make sure he gets to bed on, you know, at a certain time and gets up at a certain time or whatever. He goes, that's why he's such a badass. So just to see that and see them train was amazing, bro. I mean, so now he opened up an academy that's literally right behind where I work. So I'm like, dude, and then Alan Goes is coming like, dude, we want to talk about the stars being in line? I'm like, dude, I got to go to this. So I it's too bad that you can't go. I know people have lives or whatever, bro, but this would have been a good one to go to. But there's some more down the line, so I'll take you to some of those so I can fully enlighten you into the world of jiu-jitsu and MMA. All right, my man?
I'm still waiting for it. I know it's not on you. It's on me. I'm my, you know, different kind of work complications. But
yeah.
Eager to step into this world. of MMA, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, even just hearing Alan Gores go out about it and tell his story, that was pretty interesting. Got me thinking, oh, yeah, definitely like to learn how to fight from underneath because, yeah, especially in wrestling, you know, that's something that happens. But in the MMA world, when someone's on top of you, you can't just be like, yo, next spot. It's like, no, you got to learn how to fight out of that. And I always carry, I can't always carry a weapon on me. So, yeah, it'd be really cool to pick up on these closing techniques.
And he does. He's not scared of nobody, even back then, because he fought Mark Coleman in Pride. And Alan Gores was a middleweight, and Mark Coleman was a heavyweight. And Mark Coleman was full on specific supplements that he was taking. And a big, you know, wrestler, shoot wrestler, ground and pound specialist. Yeah, and he fought him. He fought him. He didn't win, but he took it to him or whatever, so it just goes to show. But anyways, Lance, a million thank yous, bro, for putting up with me, man, and listening to my stuff. I look forward to you guys, you know, taking it, you and Mike taking it from here and really putting it out there, man. I have full faith, especially with you two guys, that you guys are going to take it to the next level. The ratings are there, bro. I'll screenshot the last one and send it to you. It's starting to pick up the pace. So we'll have some of these people start calling in too. You know, a lot of people are keyboard warriors, bro, and they won't call in. So we're going to say, well, if you want to say something, here's the number. So call in and we'll talk about it. Since Fabiano's not here to take up all the time anymore, we'll go from there. But any last words, Lance, before we get out of here?
Man, I'm going to miss you. You know, next week there's going to be no Brutal Rap. There's going to be no Fabi. It's just me and Michael Parks. Michael Parks might be busy. It might be the Lance Winter Show. Who knows? It's always been an honor working with you, and I appreciate everything you've done for me in the last 6 years, man. You really did elevate my game to another level in terms of radio talk, in-person etiquette, and anything in between, you know. And now moving into the MMA world, like I'm just beyond grateful. I want to say thank you, Fabi, personally. Live on the air at Two Scoops and the Brand Raisins. Sorry.
Two Scoops. All right. For sure, man. I'll be in touch. Michael Parks, man, we appreciate you. We look forward to seeing you back here next week. I'll get with you all. Dude, I love the business, you know, or whatever, but when it's time to go, it's time to go. We're going to move on to greener pastures, and I have full confidence that these guys will be able to take it to the next level. So these guys will see you next week. Okay, Lance, I'll be in touch, and we'll go from there. How's that, my man?
Sounds good, boss man. Thank you again. And everyone,
all
listen,
right.
Hope you have a great night.
Yeah, we'll see everybody next week.